and her family. There was that famine in the land of Judah. Then there was the move to pagan Moab, the death of her husband, the marriage of her two sons to foreign wives, 10 years of childlessness for both of them, and then the death of her sons. One blow after another. Tragedy upon tragedy. And that has caused Naomi to say, "The Lord's hand has gone out against me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." And locked in that understandable bitterness, she fails to see those signs of hope. That bit of yellow appearing in the corner of the screen. She knows there is a God. And she knows that he's in control, that he rules both national and personal circumstances. But she fails to see that in the midst of her bitter experiences, God is at work. As readers, we are kind of given something of a bird's eye view. We know that what happens is not just a chance series of events. After all, Ruth would never have gone to Bethlehem, would never have known the God of Israel, would never play her part in the family tree of David, as we discover at the end of the book, indeed the family tree of Jesus, if it were not for the tragedy that befell Naomi. Naomi's theology is not at fault. It is indeed God's providence which is overruling, which is supervising the cruel tragedy of her life. But what she feels to be the arbitrary lashes of some heavenly tyrant is in fact, if only she knew it, the early moves in a cosmic plan of salvation, which is so grand and so enormous in its scope to be breathtaking. In fact, God's providence is even more wonderful than Naomi realizes. And as I look back on last week, I have to say, it's more wonderful than I had realized. You see, the story begins with a mistake, as we heard. Elimelech choosing to emigrate to Moab is a decision that no godly Jew should ever have made. But, of course, if Elimelech had not made that choice, then the story of Ruth would never have begun. Isn't that something of a comfort to us? Some of us torture ourselves with regret. If only I had not made that decision. If only I had not made that mistake. If only I'd brought up my children differently. If only a mistake of many years ago, maybe. But it's nonsense to think like that. Where in the whole Bible does a human mistake ever obstruct God's purposes? Nowhere. Never. On the contrary, with amazing skill, God achieves his purposes by means of our mistakes. Just think of Judas's betrayal. That was a mistake, wasn't it? Yet without that mistake, Christ would not have saved anybody. So maybe that's a word for someone here tonight. Don't allow past mistakes to haunt you. Mistakes they were, and regrettable too, but God has used them. God will use them. Such mistakes may bring problems and their pain. The blood may be bitter in its taste, as Naomi found, but trust God. because the flower will be sweet when it blooms. He incorporates even our mistakes into the tapestry that he is weaving. God is at work for Naomi's glory, to return her and others to the promised land, to himself. He ended the famine. He made sure that she got to hear about it. He opened a way back. He gave her a devoted daughter-in-law. God was at work for her good, and that is true for all God's children, even in our darkest times. And if we remember that, then we will be more ready than Naomi was to see those rays of hope, to see that yellow coming into the screen when it begins to appear. In this next chapter, chapter 2 here, God's mercy will become so obvious that even Naomi will recognize it. Let's see then, God providing. Verse 1, enter Boaz. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. Here is our narrator telling us how God is providing, even though neither Ruth nor Naomi see it yet. And we're told some very significant things about Boaz. He is a relative of Elimelech. So things are not nearly as bleak as Naomi said they were back in chapter 1, when she gave the impression that there was no one for Ruth to marry, no one to carry on the family line. Here is just such a man. But as for us as readers, mention of Boaz here is like a bright crack that begins to appear in that dark cloud that seems to be hanging over Naomi. And that crack is going to get bigger and bigger. We're told that he's a man of standing. That's a sort of broad sort of term for a man who is known for his strength and ability and courage and success. He is the best of men. Well, having dropped that hint of God providing, and providing rather well, our narrator skillfully switches back to Ruth. She takes the initiative, verse 2, in finding food for Naomi and herself. She doesn't wait to be told. She has committed herself to Naomi, and now she takes the initiative to provide for them both. A bit of a contrast to Naomi, who it seems can only wallow in her despair. She says, go ahead to Ruth, but doesn't join in the gleaning herself. Ruth takes initiative, but without being presumptuous. She's humble. You notice the report that came back from Boaz's foreman, verse 7? She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. She doesn't demand a handout. She doesn't even presume the right to glean at the edges of the field. She simply wants to gather up the leftovers and ask permission even to do that. Yes, she knows how to take the initiative, but she's not pushy or presumptuous. She is meek and humble. She's also hard-working. The foreman said, she went out into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. Later on, verse 17, we're told that Ruth gleaned in the field until evening, and then she threshed the barley that she had she'd gathered before finally taking it home to Naomi. She's hard-working. In chapter 1, We saw Ruth trusting God, trusting that he had a future for her. She didn't know what that was, but she's ready to trust God regardless. And while she waits for that future to unfold, she doesn't sit around waiting for God's blessings to drop into her lap. She gets on and does what she can. And significantly, it is while she is engaged in doing what she can that God brings her to the attention of Boaz, the husband that God has in mind for her. Well, likewise, there is many a Christian young person who has got on serving the Lord on a Christian camp or on a ministry training course or something, and doing so has met their future life partner. But the principle is wider than that. Throughout this story, God's favor is only experienced by those who are active in faith. Nobody finds a blessing in this tale by doing nothing. So it is that Boaz, who we know has been waiting in the wings, now enters the story. Verse 4, just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you. When Boaz appears, he does so with the Lord's name upon his lips. And his workers respond, the Lord bless you. Just a conventional greeting? Well, perhaps. But the fact that it's recorded adds to the portrait of Boaz. He's not just a wealthy man with fields and servants. He is also a true and godly Israelite who honors the Lord in his conversation and in the conduct of his business. He approaches Ruth, verse 8, and shows great kindness to her, even though she is a foreigner. He tells her to work in his field and to work alongside his servant girls. He protects her by telling his men not to molest her. And he makes sure that she has water to drink. Ruth is a model of responsibility and industry. Boaz is a model of kindness and godliness. And no doubt our narrator wants us to admire them, but he also wants us to realize God's merciful providence is behind all of this. Verse 3 there. As it turned out, Ruth finds herself working in a field belonging to Boaz. Of all the fields that she could have worked in, she ends up working in Boaz's field. As it turned out, she just happened to find herself in that particular field. You don't have to make your theology of providence explicit in every line. Sometimes it's good to leave it a bit ambiguous, to give your reader a chance to work it out for themselves. The answer can be given later, and it will be. But yes, here is God at work, out of sight, behind the scenes, but nevertheless bringing Ruth to the field of Boaz. There were no angelic visions, no voices from heaven to direct her to the right field. Nevertheless, as she trusted in the Lord, he directed her to the right place. God is gracious and sovereign, even when he is silent. His merciful providence is always at work for the good of his people. And so we come to the question and answer that lies at the heart of this chapter. Ruth asks Boaz a question, which turns out to be very profound. It's actually the question that we all need to ask God. And nothing is more important than the answer he gives. Ruth bows to the ground, and she says to Boaz, verse 10, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" She knows she's a Moabitess. She knows that, humanly speaking, she's at a great disadvantage. She's a foreigner. She can't expect any special treatment. She is humbly astonished by Boaz's kindness to her. What a contrast to today. We often have a sense of entitlement. We're resentful if we don't get our rights. But Ruth expresses her unworthiness, her undeserving, as she bows to the ground, as she asks her question, "Why me?" Proud people don't feel amazed at being treated well. They don't feel gratefulness. But humble people do. And they become even more humble, amazed that such great grace and kindness comes to them. But they receive the gift. Proud people often struggle to do that. They receive the gift and their joy increases, not their self-importance. Grace is not intended to replace lowliness with pride. It's intended to replace sorrow with joy. But we're getting ahead of ourselves a bit. Ruth asks Boaz why he has treated her so graciously, or why God has ordained for Boaz to be so gracious. And Boaz's answer is crucial to this chapter, to the rest of the book. Verse 11, "I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Does our writer want us to think that Ruth's love for Naomi has somehow merited Boaz's favor and God's favor? Does he want us to think of grace as a kindness that we earn? I think a superficial reading of those verses would suggest that. But look more closely. If Ruth had earned the favor of Boaz and of God, then she would be like a worker collecting her wage. But the picture of verse 12 makes that impossible. Boaz says, "May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." I know the words repay and reward might suggest earning a wage, but actually the picture is of God as a great eagle and Ruth as a threatened little chick coming to find safety under the eagle's wings. The message of verse 12 is that God will reward Ruth because she has sought refuge under his wings. It's a common picture in the Old Testament. Psalm 57, "Have mercy on me, O God, have mercy on me, for in you my soul takes refuge. I take refuge in the shadow of your wings." Notice the word for. Have mercy on me, for in you my soul takes refuge. Why should God show mercy to Ruth? Because she has taken refuge under his wings. She has reckoned God's protection as superior to all others. She has set her heart on God for solid hope and lasting joy, nothing else. And when a person does that, well, then God's honor is at stake. The issue is not the value of what we might have done. The issue is the honor of God's name, God's reputation. And yes, he will be merciful. It's not Ruth's work that is the reason for God's blessing. It's because she has pinned her hopes upon his name. She is trusting in his reputation. And that matters to God. And so he works non-stop for the protection and the joy of all who depend on him. So, in effect, Boaz is saying, Ruth, because you've chosen to take refuge under the wings of God, therefore I pray that he will uphold the honor of his name, he will uphold the power and grace of his wings by giving you what you need. Look closely, and it is very different from saying that Ruth's care of Naomi has merited the favor of God. Rather, the key is that she has chosen to take refuge under God's wings. So how does Ruth's love for Naomi relate to her taking refuge under God's wings? There seems to be some sort of connection in these verses. Well, it is what we saw last week. Ruth is able to leave the comfort of Moab, the refuge of her home surroundings, able to risk all because she's found a far better refuge under the wings of God. In response to the care that she is receiving from her eagle, she commits herself to care for Naomi in the same sort of way. That's the way the Christian life is meant to be. The Apostle Paul said, by the grace of God, I am what I am, and his grace to me was not in vain. On the contrary, I worked harder than any of them, yet not I, but the grace of God that was with me. Paul worked hard, but he worked in God's strength. He had come under God's wings and was getting his strength from him. He did not earn God's grace by his hard work. Rather, God's grace made his hard work possible. And so it is with Ruth. She finds favor with God by helplessly coming under his wings as an undeserving Moabite. And in the strength of that favor, in the security of that protection, she is set free to serve Naomi. Being under God's wings enabled her to forsake human refuge and to give herself in love to Naomi. And it's one of the main reasons why the book of Ruth is in our Bibles. But such confidence, such security, is meant to release radical risk-taking love. Jesus himself said, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. But you were not willing. All they had to do was to take refuge under the wings of Jesus. Stop trying to justify themselves. Stop relying on themselves. Stop glorifying themselves. But they would not. Ruth was not their model. No falling on their face before Jesus. No bowing down. No astonishment at grace. Don't be like those Pharisees. Be like Ruth. God is not an employer looking for employees. He does not need our help. The gospel is not an employment ad. Rather, he is an eagle looking for people who will take refuge under his wings, looking for people who will leave father and mother and home and anything else that may hold them back from a life of love under the wings of Jesus. Let's finish by briefly going back to Naomi. After Boaz has given Ruth all that she can eat for lunch, she works until sunset. She goes home to Naomi and gives her the leftovers of her lunch and all the grain. She tells Naomi what has happened with Boaz, and at last Naomi's bitterness begins to lift. Verse 20 here. The Lord bless him, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. Whose kindness? Well, surely it is the Lord's. It was, after all, the Lord who she thought had given up on kindness. But now Naomi sees that that was not the case. He had stopped the famine. He had provided Ruth for her. He had kept Boaz as the next of kin for Ruth. It was no coincidence that Ruth happened to come into the field of Boaz. No coincidence that he had shown favor to this poor foreigner. The Lord directed her steps and his favor. So at last the light of God's love has broken through, bright enough even for Naomi to see. The Lord is good. He is good to all who take refuge under his wings. Now, we live this side of Jesus' death and resurrection. Unlike Naomi, we can look back to the cross of Christ and grasp once more the height and the depth of God's love for us in Jesus. And if we keep on doing that, then we will never lose sight of God's lavish mercy to us, even in the darkest of times.